This is the DM's commentary for the April 3rd, 2009 session of the Fall of Night campaign. This session took place mostly in a place called the Tomb of Anastasia. This adventure location is linked to the A Matter of Time adventure. This adventure started during the first session when one of the PCs, Tristram Shandy, received some kind of dream, message, vision, what have you, from a demonic-sounding creature who called himself Kronos. Kronos said to Tristram that one of Tristram's friends, Alex, would soon approach him and tell him of a tomb not far outside the city that could possibly contain some powerful divination magic items. The party was led along with this idea of, you know, promised rewards and riches for looting some tomb that apparently had not been disturbed in almost 1,000 years or so. The adventure itself, or this place here at the Tomb of Anastasia, was your basic kind of dungeon crawl. There were, of course, various undead creatures that haunted the place, and there were a number of interesting color puzzles inside the tomb. The players, of course, wrecked most of the undead. They had a little bit of trouble here and there, but they got extremely frustrated and extremely bored by the couple of color puzzles that were included. One of the color puzzles was just a, you know, a pattern matching kind of puzzle, and the other one used the rules for the Neutron game. Neutron game being where there's a, you know, a set of pieces up and down the left side and right side with a little neutron stone in the center, and the goal was to get that neutron stone into your opponent's home row. Of course, the part of the puzzle was figuring out what the rules were. So once they figured out how the pieces moved and operated and how you had to activate them, they were able to quickly beat me, the DM, from being able to do that puzzle. A couple of interesting notes throughout the Tomb of Anastasia. When they finally got inside, they noticed that there were several statues inside the main tomb room to Andara Winters. Andara Winters, of course, is one of the companions of Mygrandon, who fought in the Marco Wars, but her greater claim to fame came after the Marco Wars when she founded the Magocracy of Daromir. During the Marco Wars, it was very difficult for people outside of Marco's power structure to know the ways of magic, and it was only a few people outside of Marco, part of the Resistance, and a part of Mygrandon's company, were able to learn magic. So after the Marco Wars were over, Andara Winters founded Daromir for the sole purpose of creating a place where magic could once again become a freely used and prosperous part of the world. Part of magic in general, magic making a comeback in the world. And she was fairly successful during her time. In the Tomb of Anastasia, they found those statues, which was, you know, interesting, but, you know, with the age of this tomb being what it would be, being able to revere Andara Winters like that would be something very suitable to do inside the tomb. However, the player characters were not fully satisfied with just going into a tomb and flipping the coffin lids off of things, looking for old loot. That is all they found at first, so they decided to move stuff around and ended up moving one of the tomb/sarcophagi pieces to find the Zelda-like opening to the underparts of the tomb. The under part of the tomb was where so-called puzzle/key traps, puzzles for no other reason than having puzzles, were found. It was definitely, both puzzles broke the rules of D&D puzzle design. The rules of D&D puzzle design being, one, it should be optional, two, it should be able to be done by everybody at the same time. Many puzzles will make it so really only one person is active at the time. Rule 3, meaning it's got some kind of built-in hint system, Well, I had kind of a built-in hint system, but I didn't use it for some time. Built-in hint system being Tristram's friend Alex, who, after watching the party goof and goof and goof at these puzzles, decided to make some various obvious commentary that probably helped the PCs along. Also, rule four, it should be quick. You know, those are pretty much the rules of D&D puzzle design. I failed to follow all those rules on purpose. One being because I wanted to have another irritating color puzzle like I did in the beginning of the Shadows of Lorinon campaign that pissed so many people off. Now that I've gotten that out of my system, I won't have to do it anymore. But otherwise, you know, it was interesting puzzles. The second puzzle was better than the first, because the first, of course, could have just been brute forced, because it was just trying to find the correct order that the colored stones had to go in, with a little system based on, they had to figure out the system of when they had colors in the right spots, it would reveal how many colors had been in the right spots by throwing a number of colored stones on the left side of the room equal to the number of right spots, but it didn't actually throw the correct stones over there. So the biggest problem was not getting that was the way that the puzzle was trying to tell you that, hey, you're wrong, as the party kept believing that those stones were in the right spots, and they just kept lucking out getting other stones in the right spots that it reinforced that kind of solution to them. Eventually, they did get it figured out, I believe with the help of Alex giving some guidance. Second puzzle, as mentioned before, was just the Neutron game. The puzzle was mostly figuring out how the pieces moved and what the rules were. But once both of the puzzles had been solved, the way led forward. The final room that they were able to get to in the Tomb of Anastasia was similar upstairs, but the statues that were down here were of my Grand Antelus himself, the hero of the Marco Wars, the man who ended up defeating Marco the Enslaver at the end. But one of the interesting things that they found down here was a Spellweaver skeleton. Spellweavers being some of the creatures that worked with Marco. You can't actually say that the Spellweavers were enslaved by Marco, but there was some kind of deal worked out between Marco and the Spellweavers to help him out in the war there. So it's interesting that they found a Spellweaver skeleton down here defending whatever was beyond. Now, the door that had led out of this last room that they got to had been surrounded by this red, misty kind of force barrier deal, and when they went to investigate it and touch it, out popped what some followers of the previous campaigns may know as a Dirate spirit. Dirate being one of the malleable magic ores / resources that can be used to make magic items. Dirate is primarily found in the mountains of Dire, the northern mountains there. The name fails me at the moment, but it's in the Dire entry. And Dire being an island that is very, very difficult to get to. Think kind of like the island in Lost, though the Dire Island, of course, was in existence before Lost. So anyway, they found a Dirate spirit there. Dirate spirits being some kind of soul stuff that the Dirate can sometimes consume. Now, when the Dirate spirit popped out, they were able to defeat it, but as immediately after the Dirate spirit was defeated, a voice sounded out, just like Kronos' voice from before. Tristram, the player playing Tristram, decided not to tell the party that the voice matched that of the person he had heard in his dreams. However, this time, Kronos simply gave some words of warning. Let me see if I can find it here extremely quickly. And it looks like I'm going to not find it. Actually, it's right here. This is what it sounded like. This is what our friend Kronos asked.
Tread lightly, fools. You come for knowledge, but knowledge will drive you mad. Let time consume what is forgot. Those who seek must not go forward blindly. Whose tomb is this?
So they asked, whose tomb is this? Kronos asked, whose tomb is this? And the party, of course, shouted something off that didn't really matter whatsoever. And they were instantly transported outside of the tomb after being informed that their answer was incorrect. The tomb itself disappeared from their view. It was no longer a part of the graveyard. It wasn't easy. It wasn't exactly meant to be solved. The tomb should make future appearances as a part of the A Matter of Time adventure that focuses around Tristram Shandy and his family. They gave it a good bet. They did find some powerful items of divination there. The couple of the items stayed with the party. But the Azure Mind Crystal, Alex took back to both Tristram and Alex's master, Master Alvers, and he is currently looking over the crystal and examining what powers it might have. Now, the last couple of minutes of the adventure were more entertaining as far as moving stuff along goes. When the party got back to town, after spending the entire session in a dungeon tromp with little role-playing, little story development, a whole bunch of things happened. One, Mr. Taliesin, Caradoc, the detective, went back to his office and found his friend, Daryl from the Square Bard, beheaded, dismembered, and the parts scattered throughout his office. Additionally, his office was pretty much destroyed. All of his journals and so forth were ripped to shreds, and anything of value that had somehow been lost inside his office had been taken. Now, this is very disturbing because Daryl had recently done a favor for our friend the detective. The detective apparently has had some kind of debt owed to a Johnny, and had been owed this money for a long time. Johnny had decided to send a thug after the detective to rough him up a little bit. This happened during the first session a couple weeks ago. To get back at Johnny, our friend Taliesin decided that it would be best to fill his balls with saline. So that's what he concocted to do. In addition to doing such a thing, he did repay his gambling debt. So the session ended with that part unresolved. Why exactly Johnny would go to such great lengths to kill Daryl and make his displeasure known to the detective. Additionally, when the party went back to the Buckets O' Beer Tavern, they were greeted to two letters that had been delivered there for the party as a part of previous work they had done. The first invitation came from the Order of Libertas, the Order of Libertas being one of the more freedom-slash-liberty-focused organizations in this city of strict law. The invitation called for the party to come do some work for them. Some kind of monetary compensation was hinted at. The party, of course, wanted to know more than was revealed in the invitation, so they have yet to decide if they want to pursue it. However, they also received an invitation from the Order of Night's Breath. The Order of Night's Breath being one of the orders of the Church of Wee Jazz in town, their primary function being to monitor the population, to control the population, and to stamp out any kind of dissent or quell any kind of rebellious behavior, often the same kind of behavior that is exhibited by the Order of Libertas. Now, so the party can decide, you know, to take up the invitation of either of these orders. Right now, it looks like the party is pushing more for the Order of Night's Breath, the decidedly evil organization, the more evil organization, I say. They believe that the Order of Night's Breath will be able to offer them more in the ways of material gain. A couple members of the party are trying to work against that. Both Garthen, he would rather not work for the Order of Night's Breath, but also the detective Taliesin Caradoc, who follows the Way of Libertas, the Way of Libertas being one of the philosophies that developed during the Marco Wars over 1,300 years ago as a way of gaining access to divine magic that was being denied by the Deoxilium. So the party has yet to decide who they're going to work for. I guess we'll find out next session. Trying to give them a choice of which way they want to go, a more chaotically good organization or a lawfully evil organization. We'll see how they go. It's kind of split right now. However, not only is these two organizations giving work, offering work to the party, and also some kind of murder investigation into Daryl could be possible things that the party could do. Also, north of town, there appeared to be some kind of necrotic green plumes coming from the north. Some of the locals were able to determine that those plumes were probably coming from one of the forests that's to the north. The only one that took apparent concern to that was, of course, Garthen, the druid in the party. He has tried to convince the party to go figure out what is going on there. The population seemed to be kind of concerned about what was going on, but otherwise they went about their daily business. I don't know if it got mentioned in the session or not, but by the end of that day, the end of March 19, 1332, it was revealed that some of the wizards that are responsible for doing research and, you know, kind of just magical kind of research and development for the country is involved with what of those necrotic green plumes are. So that was pretty much the session. You could get that same information in the session recap below. As far as my own commentary on the session itself, I think, was kind of boring, a little more boring than the first two sessions. The first two sessions were definitely, you know, a lot of role-playing, a lot of discovering who's, you know, the different characters were, you know, introducing a bunch of the new plot points that are going on in the campaign. And, you know, it did have a little bit of, you know, combat and things too, but otherwise, those two first sessions were very, fast-paced, very, on the go, very, let's get to know each other and figure out what's going on. This session, the April 3rd session, was, more of a, your traditional dungeon crawl for just dungeon crawling. There was a lot of fighting. There were, let's see, four to five encounters just down in the little tomb. The tomb itself didn't have much to it, but there was a lot of combat. In addition, you know, the major combats were separated by a couple of irritating puzzles that violated the D&D rules for puzzle design. But otherwise, you know, I think most of the interesting stuff happened towards the end of the session when different things got revealed. It was pushing some of the plot lines further. But it also I'm trying to get the A Matter of Time adventure going for Tristram. I did like the session, though, just because it started to tie in this session, or I'm sorry, this campaign a little more into the last campaign and some of the background and history that's been in this world. A lot of the Shadows of Lorinon campaign, or Shadows over Lorinon campaign, the last campaign that we did, was about revealing the history, you know, kind of the stuff that happened 1,300 years ago with the Marco Wars, and kind of came to a head with Marco being resurrected at the end of that campaign. This campaign actually takes place more than a few months before Marco is resurrected. So, you know, I don't have to do as much revealing to the players about what's going on in the background and the history of the world, especially since the Marco Wars, etc., mostly happened on the continent they're on. And most of the people have a much better knowledge of the Marco Wars and the history since then. A lot of the people on some of the other continents, Lorinon in that case, things weren't so clear. The party was definitely going around and getting together with sages and doing a lot of information gathering that way. I still intend to reveal additional things about the background of the world and so forth in this campaign, and I've started to do so. You know, a couple last week's link to the old campaign was, of course, the introduction of Mecta Flamboulian, who is a dwarf wizard who the party from the last campaign was actually looking for a time. He is destined to be pivotal in the events of the world to come. Mecta is looking for something, and he's about found it, about unleashed it, and that's going to cause some drastic problems for the world in the future. But other than that, I think the session was okay. You know, there are players that like some nitty-gritty combat and fighting, and the combat wasn't too easy. It wasn't pushover. They did have some rough spots. There were some unconscious people at various times. And except for, I think, the detective who said, "I take a full defensive action a lot," and even the wizard, Tristram Shandy, who was trying to hold off on his resource, said, "I take a full defensive action a lot." I think the combat was okay. The combats themselves weren't any kind of special. We are still first and second level characters at this point, so you know, there's not going to be a lot of spectacular things, but, you know, sending swarms against first-level characters, you know, yikes. Sending an incorporeal creature at first-level characters, yikes. They found a magic sword as a part of that encounter, so I don't feel too bad about that. They did have a necklace of fireballs as well that ended up finishing that direte spirit off. But I think that about does it. There's not a whole lot else I can talk about for this session. It was very, you know, it was a shorter session, and it was mostly fighting and puzzle solving. Hopefully in future recaps I can, or future DM's commentary, I can go in a little bit more about kind of the plot lines, things that are going on, and hopefully I won't duplicate so much information that is in the session recap below. All right, thanks for listening. If you are a player in the campaign, you know where to find me, and we can talk about things more. Have a good one.